This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me now, local attorney Robert Bellott. His story made national headlines as he took on a high-profile case against the DuPont Chemical Company. He filed a federal suit against DuPont in West Virginia over the dangers of Teflon and the chemical PFOA, also known as C8. Robert Bellott is here to give us an overview of the case and fill us in on the latest developments. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rob, good to see you this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Rob, tell us what was the starting point for all this legal action against DuPont over PFOA? What was the origin?
Well, we got involved actually back in 1998 with a farmer who came to us with trouble he was having with cattle that were being exposed to some sort of chemical coming out of a landfill. And we found out through representing that farmer that there was a chemical that the cattle were being exposed to called PFOA, and led to discovery of what that chemical was. We ended up getting a lot of documentation from DuPont over the next several years about what that chemical was. It was relatively unknown at the time, and discovered that it was a fairly toxic chemical. It was a carcinogen, and not only was it something that the cattle were being exposed to at pretty high levels, but we found out that it was also in the drinking water of tens of thousands of people along the Ohio River outside of Parkersburg. And that led to a class action lawsuit that got filed in 2001 where we represented the class of folks that were exposed to the chemical in their water. And again, throughout additional years of discovery against DuPont and collecting more documents, we learned that the chemical had been in the water since at least 1984. And that DuPont had known about it since 1984 being in the water, and they knew that it was at levels higher than even their own scientists said should be in the water, even though it was not regulated. DuPont had their own internal standards. And what concerned us was nobody had been told. The community hadn't been told about it and had been drinking this for many years, which led to us notifying the US EPA back in March of 2001 that here's this unusual toxic carcinogen that appears to be in drinking water of tens of thousands of people in West Virginia and Ohio. We're not sure if you know much about this, US EPA. Here are some of the documents we've been seeing, and please step in and do something about this. Again, that was almost 15 years ago, more than 15 years ago. And that led to the US EPA initiating an investigation in 2002, starting to look into the chemical. Led to, over the next several years, the US EPA coming out with risk assessments, which again confirmed this was a likely carcinogen and something that needed to be done about it. It led to a total phase out of production of the chemical in the United States by 2006. And we eventually worked out a settlement with DuPont for the folks in West Virginia, Ohio, that required water filtration systems be put in place for about 70,000 people in those communities, public water supplies in the West Virginia and Ohio side, private well owners. That was done 2006-2007 timeframe. And at that point, the US EPA kind of backed away once there had been this commitment by the companies to phase out and to stop manufacturing this chemical. Hmm. And we kept trying to push the US EPA to take additional action, saying this chemical isn't just in West Virginia and Ohio. It's likely all over the country.
Yeah, it's very pervasive, isn't it?
It is extremely pervasive. It was used in a number of commercial products, nonstick cookware, stain-resistant carpeting, fast food wrappers, a number of different products. And our concern, which we raised to EPA about 10 years ago, was you need to be looking in other places where this has been used across the country, other manufacturing sites, landfills, disposal sites. Please look into this. Let people know if it's in the water and do something about it, and alert people if it's in the water at too high levels. And unfortunately, the US EPA really didn't do much for the next 10 years until in the last year or so. Through some litigation that we've continued under the settlement we set up back in for the West Virginia and Ohio folks, we set up an independent science panel that looked at all the health data and concluded that drinking this chemical in your water is linked with six serious diseases, including two forms of cancer. And when that information came out, 2012-2013 timeframe, we again pushed US EPA to please notify folks if it's in other water supplies across the country, which led to the US EPA finally starting to require public water supplies across the country to begin sampling for this chemical, but it's still unregulated. EPA still hadn't regulated it. So water supplies start sampling for it, presenting that data to US EPA, but the customers aren't told. So this data starts going into US EPA in 2013-2014 timeframe, confirming the chemical is in fact being found in public water supplies across the country. We again urged EPA, let people know about this, and please set an acceptable level in drinking water. Our concern was the chemical is very biopersistent. It will stay in your body at even the tiniest amount that you drink will stay in the body and build up to higher and higher and higher levels over time. So even if you have the tiniest amount in your water, if you drink it for long enough, it can build up to high levels. So we were encouraging EPA to let people know about it, whether it's in the water, and if even in the tiniest amounts, it ought to be filtered out. The US EPA finally started paying attention within, I would say, the last 6 or 7 months, when there was a little bit of national media attention with the Flint, Michigan crisis, with people paying, you know, being concerned about there's these chemicals, in that case, lead in the water. We ought to be warned about this. Why didn't the government warn us about it? There was some publicity about some of these cases that we were working on for PFOA finally going to trial and resulting in verdicts against the company, showing that this does in fact cause cancer in people who've been exposed to it. And it led to the US EPA coming out since we last spoke in March. US EPA came out in May of this year with its first ever guideline for this chemical in drinking water at a really relatively low level, 0.07 parts per billion, and notified, issued notice, and then public water supplies across the country that have been sampling and testing it realized they now have this chemical in their water above levels EPA was saying safe. So in the last, you know, since May, there's been a bit of a explosion of coverage, media coverage, where these various communities across the country are just now realizing this chemical's in their water, likely been in their water for years, and at levels that EPA is finally letting them know are too high. And so you're seeing this come up in all over the country, in Colorado, New York State, New Hampshire, Vermont. And it just led just recently to the U.S. Congress, the House on Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, sending a letter just
so they took notice.
Yeah. Sent a letter just a week or so ago to US EPA asking, what's been going on here? We want to know, when did you first know about all of this, and why has this been taking so long to get the information out? So it's been a long history here that's dating back over 15 years where it's taken that long to get information out to people who've been drinking this all over the country.
You talked about how there, prior to the EPA setting this standard, there were no standards, there were no regulations, not even at the state level, even any particular states that did something about this?
Not until, I would say, the first state that really did anything was the state of New Jersey, came out with a guideline, again, just an informal guideline back in 2007 when the chemicals showed up in drinking water out there. And the state of Minnesota did the same thing in 2007 when the chemical showed up outside one of the 3M manufacturing plants in Minnesota. But the states were sort of left on their own to deal with this issue as the chemical was being found in their communities without much guidance from the US EPA. And one of the things that the folks, I think, in the regulated community have cited as one of the key problems as to why this happened was the Federal Toxic Substances Control Act, which is the federal law that's supposed to give EPA the authority to regulate chemicals like this out in the environment. really did not have much teeth in order to give EPA the authority to come out and do much about chemicals like this. And what we've seen is just within the last couple of weeks, that law was finally amended and changed for the first time in 40 years to give EPA more authority to deal with situations like this where there is a chemical out in the environment that, appears to be presenting threats, risks to health, that the EPA needs more information about. Law has been amended now to finally give EPA more authority to go out and require something to actually be done.
We will continue our conversation with attorney Rob Ballot about his case against DuPont over PFOA. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guest this afternoon, local attorney Robert Ballot, who filed a federal suit against DuPont over the chemical PFOA, also known as C8. And you can join us this afternoon. Email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Phone number is 513-419-7100. Rob, this has been going on for, you said 98 was the starting point for this, so getting close to 18 years.
Correct.
Is it typical for an environmental case like this to go on for so long?
Not really. This is a bit of an unusual case because it's involved in what was people have called an unregulated chemical, something that really wasn't subject to a lot of the existing federal and state regulations. So there was it took a lot longer to get a lot of things done that maybe normally wouldn't take quite as long if you were dealing with a regular listed hazardous chemical. Some environmental cases do take a long time for cleanup sites or places where hazardous waste has been disposed. Some of those cases can go on for many, many years as well, but not many go on quite this long.
What is the latest on the litigation? Where does that stand?
Well, after this independent science panel we talked about that came out with its findings in 2012 and said these six diseases were linked, we had about 3,500 people in the community in West Virginia and Ohio that had one of the more of those diseases that filed their lawsuits. We picked six cases to go to trial out of that 3,500 during 2016. The first one went to trial late last year, resulted in a verdict against DuPont of $1.6 million for a kidney cancer survivor. And the second case went to trial just a couple weeks ago. In fact, we had a six-week trial up in Columbus that ended July 8th with a jury coming back again with a verdict against DuPont, this time for $5.1 million for a testicular cancer victim. And this time, the jury also awarded punitive damages against the company of another $500,000 plus attorney's fees. And the remaining bellwether cases have now since been settled. So the next step in that litigation will be there will be 40 additional cancer cases tried during 2017. And that schedule will pick up pretty soon.
There's a project that grew out of this too, C8 Health Project, I believe is the name of it.
Correct.
Is that still ongoing at this point? And explain what that is.
It is not anymore. What happened is when we settled the case back in 2005, DuPont provided funds for the class of about $70 million. And what we decided to do was rather than just cut checks to everybody in the class for that $70 million, we would use that money to generate some of the data that was missing at the time about what does this chemical do to people who are exposed in the community. And so we came up with a plan to use that money to actually get people, have their blood tested for the chemical, gather their medical records. We proposed that plan to everybody in the class. It was approved and approved by the court. So that $70 million was used to actually pay for blood testing and medical record collection for the class. And we ended up during 2006 through 2007 timeframe having about 69,000 people come in and participate and give their blood and provide medical information. That data was then turned over to this independent science panel. Again, it was all kept confidential, of course, but that data was turned over so that the independent science panel could look at what does this chemical actually do to people drinking it in these communities. So they would have the blood levels. They would have the medical information. That data was turned over. The panel used that data, studied it, and relied on it to come up with their findings about the six diseases that were linked.
So 69,000 people, could it have been a higher number?
Well, we estimated at the time that there were approximately 70,000 people in the communities that had this in their water at the time. Because when we settled the case in 2004, 2005, we identified six public water supplies around the Parkersburg area that had this in their water, and public and private well owners. And we estimated, based on the customer records, that there were about 70,000 people in those impacted water supplies. So when we had 69,000 people come forward and give their blood, we had a very, very high participation rate among the class, one of the highest of any kind of human health study like this that's ever been done.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Aaron in Springboro. Hi, Aaron.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me. I was an industrial hygienist for 19 years, which meant I went around factories and evaluated the health risks to workers of the chemicals that they were using. From day one, I was amazed to find that only about 300 chemicals out of the maybe 300,000 out there being used in industry had regulatory limits from OSHA. Now, I was able to find about another 3,000 limits that were advisory, but that still left an awful lot of chemicals for which no health effects were known or had been published. And it was left to me, not a toxicologist, just a bachelor's degreed chemist, to try to figure out what health limits I might possibly use to compare the exposures of some of these exotic chemicals to. Well, it was a very unsatisfying professional dilemma to find myself in, but I can say that we as a society have allowed this to happen because the social compact is that chemical manufacturers are allowed to produce chemicals. They're allowed to be very nimble in responding to requirements from engineers and people who make new products. And they're not held responsible for the health effects because the second half of the compact is if a problem develops, then the tort system is supposed to take care of the concerns of the average worker or community member who is ill affected by exposure to these chemicals. Unfortunately, that system doesn't work very well because the chemical manufacturers have figured out very effectively how to evade responsibility or to put off the penalty more or less forever.
Well, Aaron,
we've seen another case here.
Let's get Rob's thoughts on this.
Yeah, and this was a situation involving a chemical like the ones you just mentioned, where it was technically unregulated at the time. There were no federal or state limits on what was acceptable in the water, but the company itself had its own internal standards and its own internal guidelines of what was acceptable, which is what concerned us when we saw that was in the drinking water, was in the public was being exposed above these levels. I think there are some estimates of 60 to 70,000 chemicals that are like that as we sit here today that don't necessarily have official federal or state regulations setting limits like this. And in this case, here we alerted the EPA. This is a chemical that there ought to be a limit set for 15 years ago. And again, it's taken 15 years for the EPA to finally, for the very first time, come out with a drinking water guideline for this chemical, even though it's been in people's water known to be in the water for well over a decade. It's a very slow process. And what we're being told is even with all the information about this chemical, with an independent science panel, and we're not aware of any other chemical where this has happened, where you've got an independent science panel that studied the actual human health effects for 7 years among 70,000 people, with confirmed links to six health effects. You have the US EPA still saying, well, we need to study this more, and it may take several more years before we ever decide whether we will set any actual regulations. As we sit here today, there is still no actual federal standard or regulation for this chemical in drinking water in the United States.
But you are starting to see some progress.
We're seeing some progress where we've now got the first guideline an unofficial guideline from US EPA coming out in May of this year. And again, that took some 15 years of prodding the agency to do that, and taking a lot of, for this issue to have to be pushed in the public press for this long. And like you say, what the communities were left with were private tort action. The only way the people that were drinking this got clean water in these communities over the last 10 years was by pursuing their own private lawsuits, seeking water filtration, medical monitoring. All of that was done through the legal system, unfortunately, and not through any of the regulatory actions that people assume would be taken.
And real quickly, Rob, as we wrap this up, Parkersburg, upriver from Cincinnati, we're downriver. How safe is the water supply in our area?
Well, the PFOA that was discharged from that plant, which is upstream, as you mentioned, has flown down towards northern Kentucky and Cincinnati area. Cincinnati, luckily, has had a very large filtration plant. Northern Kentucky put one in 2012.
Rob, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Attorney Robert Bulat. Coming up, a baseball fan's ultimate fantasy, getting to run a real team with real players in a real ballpark. And Focus on Technology looks at a new skin that scientists have developed. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.